Good morning. Welcome to the Minnesota Court of Appeals. The next case on our calendar today is A24-1167, complaint decision file 24-162C on behalf of KWS from Hermantown. Each party will have 15 minutes for your primary argument. Relator will have an additional 5 minutes for rebuttal. I'll ask that you please introduce yourself and the party you represent at the beginning of your argument for purposes of the recording. The recording that we are making here today is the only recording that is permitted, and that recording will be available on our website within approximately 24 hours. So with that, counsel for relator, you can school district, you can begin when you're ready.
May it please the court, my name is Elizabeth Vieira, and joining me at council table is Craig Hardy. We represent Relator Hermantown School District in this matter. This is an appeal from a decision of the Minnesota Department of Education determining that the district failed to comply with federal special education regulations. After addressing some brief background and facts, I will focus on how the department's interpretation constitutes an error of law and is arbitrary and capricious. There are two issues presented by this appeal. The first is whether the MDE erred by concluding that the district's criteria for independent evaluations interfere with the right of a parent to obtain such evaluation. And second, whether the district's criteria for those is the same as it is for district evaluations. But the underpinning of this complaint decision is whether the parent has a right to such independent evaluation in the circumstances presented by this case.
Well, help me out and understand why you're focusing on that so much in your briefing and starting out your oral argument with that, because the decision that is being challenged here today is MDE's decision that one of the conditions that the district imposed on the IEE, which it agreed could go forward, whether so the MDE basically ordered the district to remove that condition. So the question isn't whether there's a right to an IEE. The district already agreed to that. So that ship has sailed. So I would like you to focus on the question of whether MDE erred as a matter of law when it concluded that the condition was not the same as the criteria used by the district when it initiates an evaluation, and that it was not consistent with the parents' rights to an IEE.
And I will address that. I do want to acknowledge, though, that I respectfully disagree that the question of whether there's a right to an IEE here has that the ship has sailed on that.
So
because
help me understand that, because given the procedural posture here, it's unclear to me.
Yes. So paragraph 12 of the findings in the MDE complaint decision conclude that the limiting the focus of an IEE to the issue of appropriateness of the district's evaluation of the student is not consistent with a parent's right to an IEE. And if the parent did not have a right to an IEE in the circumstances of this case, then the district cannot have interfered with that right.
Well, but that language comes from the rule, and that's where I think this, and maybe the order, you know, I recognize that language in the order, but that language comes from the rule, and that the rule talks about that an independent evaluation at public expense must be the same as the criteria that the public agency uses when it initiates an evaluation, to the extent that those criteria are consistent with the parent's rights to an independent educational evaluation. And then it goes on to say a public agency may not impose conditions or timelines beyond any that specified in paragraph one. So the language, to the extent the criteria are consistent with the parent's rights, modifies the criteria, the phrase before, which is that it must be the same as the criteria that the public agency uses when it initiates a complaint. So it's narrowing language. It's not independent language. It's modifying and narrowing language. So the question is, here before us, is are the criteria the same as the criteria that the public agency uses when it initiates an evaluation, as long as those are consistent with a parent's right to an IE?
Sure, and I think that both of those issues are relevant. I just don't see the question of whether the right exists as entirely irrelevant. But with respect to whether the same criteria apply to district evaluations, the regulations tie a independent evaluation to the evaluation with which the parents object. That's clear.
So it says the criteria must be the same as the criteria that the public agency uses when it initiates an evaluation. So what are those criteria that the agency uses when it initiates an evaluation? That the district uses.
Yep.
When it first does the evaluation.
So the district has a document outlining all of its criteria for such an evaluation. That's at starts at 259 in the record.
Okay, thank you.
And so that document identifies what those criteria are so that parents can understand them and comply with them if they choose to move forward with getting a independent educational evaluation. And the criteria that's specifically at issue here is that the IEE must focus on whether the district evaluation with which the parents disagree was appropriate at the time it was completed. And the reason that that is the same as what the district applies to its evaluations is twofold. So first, that district evaluations are required to comply with federal law. So if and there are also federal laws governing or federal regulations governing an IEE. So this essentially incorporates what the Federal District Court for the District of Minnesota has said those laws mean with respect to IEEs in Minnesota. So the fact that both of those evaluations are subject to those regulations is the underpinning of that consistency. I think given that this document is intended, the document is the criteria that I'm referring to, that document is something that school districts provide parents when they request an independent educational evaluation. It's not something that is intended to be interpreted and broken down by attorneys. It's supposed to be for parents to use. So
can I clarify, is part of the problem then a disagreement between the district and MDE in terms of what the IEE will consist of, what the topic? And by that, I mean, if I understand the facts here correctly, it seems like, and you can tell me if I'm wrong, the parent and the district agreed circumstances had changed since the first evaluation. And that's why the district thought the better route, and you explained to the parent to do a reevaluation, and then you can ask for the IEE. When that was rejected, that's when the district agreed to do the IE subject and added that condition. Now, my question then comes to, did the district need to add that condition if I'm understanding your position correctly, that the IEE, the whole idea of an IE under the regulatory framework here is because you disagree with the original evaluation, and in order to compare an IEE with the original evaluation, you would have to do the IEE with the same facts that were in existence at the time of the evaluation.
Yes, that's...
And if that's the disagreement, what authority do we look at? Because it doesn't say that, of course, mm-hmm. in this regulatory scheme, other than by implication, because your client's other option was to do the due process and explain why it was appropriate. Mm-hmm. And so... what's the authority? How do we get to that point?
So the authority comes from the NDS decision in the Federal District Court.
So I understand your argument along those lines, but let's talk about that NDS decision because it doesn't reference the rule or the language of the rule. I understand the court's reasoning, and I certainly understand the district's concern about unnecessary expenses and wanting to avoid that, but in my reading of NDS, I don't see that analysis any analysis tying the district court's conclusion that the IEE, the due process hearing, or the IEE must focus on whether the initial evaluation or reevaluation was appropriate at the time it was completed. There's a lot of kind of broad brush discussion of the law, but it's not tethered to the rule as far as I can tell. And what's before us is the language of the rule.
Yeah, so in the NDS decision, this is right before page 5, it does cite that requirement that if the evaluation is not time barred, then the hearing officer has to direct the school district to either file a due process complaint or ensure the IEE is provided at public expense. So that's the regulation we're talking about here. And the
right, but it doesn't focus on paragraph E, which is the at issue here in 34
yes.
CFR 300.502E.
Yeah. And that's correct. The NDS decision does not deal with criteria because in that case, the...
But the court was talking about what should the scope of the IEE be.
Yes. And so...
In doing so, it didn't tie it to E.
But isn't it, in fact, tied to B, which the way that you get a public evaluation is that you have a disagreement with the initial evaluation. And if the parent disagrees with that evaluation, then you're entitled to an IEE. And isn't there significant federal case law about how the purpose of the IEE is to inform the actual evaluation done by the school? It's not intended to be a reevaluation of the student.
Yes, and that's consistent with NDS and a variety of other federal cases that we cite. And I think I might be able to get to answer Judge Cochran's question. The district in this case was trying to comply with the general directive that the statute says you have to grant an IEE or you have to request a due process hearing. But we also know that from NDS, the rule in our jurisdiction is that if you request an IEE, it is to, like Judge Larson just said, it's a response to an existing evaluation. It's not a reevaluation.
If it's at public expense. I mean, that's right. That's... If you're paying for your own independent evaluation, I mean, that's we. I think that to inform, to understand E, you have to understand what's triggering us to get to a public evaluation. What's triggering a public evaluation is that the parents are disagreeing with some prior evaluation, which would indicate that those two are tied together, are tied together by the regulation, and that they're not trying to subsume public evaluations with reevaluations, which exist in a different part of the rules.
That's correct. Yes. So the there NDS, and there is no case that says yes, this is an appropriate criteria to put in an IEE criteria. But when the district is faced with the question of we have to either, according to MDE, grant this request or go to a hearing, and the law says, here is what that, when you grant that request, here is what they are entitled to. That limitation, which is language almost directly from the NDS case, is appropriate to inform parents about. So that is, the district here did not want to just delay the IEE until a reevaluation continued, even though I think they could have. But in trying to marry the that language regarding that choice with the existing law about IEEs, that's where that criterion comes into
and
play.
And so, back to Judge Sleater's point, was it necessary to include this language? Did the school district have concerns that the IEE would be misused, or why was it necessary to include that language? Because it does seem to be, you know, you could argue or logically interpret the regulations to suggest that it's a condition that is not the same as the criteria that the agency uses when it initiates an evaluation.
So this is a criterion that several school districts added to their general, the IEE criteria is a document that school districts maintain. And following the NDS decision, this language was added to a number of school district criteria. Because of this concern that there is an increasing wave of requests for IEEs that are intended to supplant district reevaluations. So this was not language that was added for this particular request. This document is part of the district's Total Special Education Services TSIS manual. And that, so you'll actually see on the top of it, I think it refers to it as an Appendix 5. That's Appendix 5 to a document that the district maintains. So this wasn't any sort of targeting directly at, you know, this parent or this situation. This is a general criteria that the district includes in its independent educational evaluation criteria because of the concerns that had arisen in response or that were addressed in NDS. So, and I think to the, it is the...
And do you think that the court in NDS didn't, I mean, E is basically if you are seeking reimbursement from the public agency for a publicly funded IEE, that you have to make sure that it follows the district's criteria, but it also says the district can't impose additional criteria. Would you agree with that?
It does say that. And I think, you know, if this would properly be identified as a informative item to parents instead of criteria, I don't know that we would be here. But the district is trying to comply with this directive that NDS is very clear that on remand, if there's an IEE, this is what the purpose is. And to avoid parents going through an entire IEE and then the district needing to go through a due process hearing to get to the same point as NDS, the district was informing the parents of the federal, or at least our jurisdiction's interpretation of federal regulations. And just like the district has to follow federal regulations in completing its evaluations, so does the parent requesting an IEE.
Further questions? Go ahead.
Just to clarify, this goes back to my maybe original question. The concern, because it probably, I'm assuming in reading it, I maybe affirmatively agree, the Department of Education has a different interpretation, obviously, not only of this rule, but of NDS than do the school districts. But your point being is that this criteria that you added, or that some of the school districts have added, and your client did, only comes into play in this kind of scenario where there's a refusal of a reevaluation, but a request for an independent evaluation. But the really what you're getting at is the criteria for doing an evaluation is the same as it was when the original evaluation was done. We just simply want to clarify that it's got to be done looking back then, because otherwise it becomes a reevaluation de facto through an IEE.
That's correct. Yes. So an evaluation is done at a point in time. And based on NDS and the other federal cases that we cite, an IEE is supposed to be about that point in time. And Judge Schultz in NDS talks about how normally, you know, normally this criterion could just be ignored because we're going to be having that independent evaluation shortly after the initial evaluation. So you're correct that it's only in these situations where that objection comes much later. Everybody agrees that circumstances have changed, and the parent refuses a reevaluation, that this would come into play. But again, because the district has to comply with the federal regulations, and this is our jurisdiction's interpretation of that federal regulation, I would submit that it's the same as those criteria that apply to the district.
So do you have any further questions at this point, Judge Larson?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I just have a question for you to think about, and you can address it on rebuttal, but is the language of paragraph E, would you say that's unambiguous or ambiguous? Thank you.
Thank you.
Counsel for the department, you can proceed when you're ready.
Good morning, Your Honors, and may it please the court. My name is Maura Allen, and I'm joined at council table by Martha Casserly, and I'm an assistant attorney general appearing today on behalf of respondent Minnesota Department of Education, or MDE. MDE respectfully requests that you affirm its decision in this case. As Your Honor already pointed out, the question that MDE investigated and answered in this case was narrow. Whether or not a school district can restrict all publicly funded IEEs to whether the district's prior evaluation was appropriate at the time that it was completed. MDE said no. This was the correct decision because it is consistent with the plain language of the applicable regulations. It is consistent with the purpose of the IDEA, and it is consistent with the factual record that was before MDE in this case.
Has MDE applied NDS the opposite way before?
I would submit that no, because MDE has never faced the situation where a school district is taking the restriction that the Judge Schlitz applied in NDS and applying it as a general criterion to all requests for publicly funded IEEs. And that is...
But in NDS, the main principle that seems the same is the Department of Education did not take the position that there's only two reading of this CFR under independent, there's only two options for a school district dependent on the facts. And those facts in that case seem to mirror here that when there's a general agreement that conditions have changed, which often occurs, it's kind of built into the whole IDEA, is there's changes that happen, that before an independent evaluation that there be the reevaluation. And that's why the Department of Education said that in that case. Isn't that the principle that school district here was relying on, and many districts apparently are, as I now understand? And isn't that a change of position for which, under our case law, the Department of Education would have to get a very thorough reasoning for departing from that position?
So it's two responses, Your Honor. One, the prior situation was actually fairly factually distinct from the situation in this case. I think you're referring to the 2019 decision in which the school district and the parents were already in a dispute. I believe they already had a due process hearing going about certain provisions in the student's educational plan and certain services that the school would or would not provide to that student. And in that case, the parents made a request for an IEE and then subsequently requested to drop the request in exchange for certain services. And so in that context, it was clear that the request for an IEE was simply an effort to negotiate with the school district. Here, the request for the IEE...
And where in the rules, based on sort of the strict interpretation of the rules, would you say that that was allowed or is different? I mean, and maybe this is getting more into our next case, but given the MDE's sort of strict construction of subdivision B, what would allow for that kind of opportunity for the district to try to actually negotiate some of these issues with parents to avoid litigation based on that extremely strict interpretation of the subdivision?
Certainly, Your Honor. I think where the school district there, I mean, if a parent drops their request for an IEE, the school district no longer has to, you know, is no longer in the situation where under the regulations they have one of two responses. And I think the other thing that I just want to, going back to the last question, make clear is that in this case, this is not a situation where the parent is already disputing something with the school, having, this idea that everyone agreed that circumstances has changed. That's not really supported by the record. Here, the parent's first request for an IEE was, I would like a second opinion on the original testing, and she said that the data was skewed. That is to... a clear disagreement with the original evaluation by the school district.
So wouldn't that necessarily mean the condition was added was consistent with the parent's request? In other words, we're not looking at a reevaluation today. We just want to look back at the data you had and the information 14 months ago, and the independent evaluator will determine whether that was appropriate. Although it seems like everybody concedes that would be a waste of time and money because circumstances always change, and now we still don't have an updated reevaluation.
And this particular child suffered a concussion in the interim.
I think There was one mention of this particular child having a head injury in a letter, but I think in the NDS case, there was the clear traumatic brain injury. And I think I think the problem is that an IEE is not necessarily simply a backwards looking form of a appeal of the original evaluation. Certainly, it is tied by the regulations to the original evaluation, because the way that the authors of the regulations balanced the desire for parents to have access to information and expertise to bring to the table, both in a due process situation, but also when they are coming to their students' individualized education plan meetings, so that they can be fully informed and be able to have that informed discussion with the team. The way that the regulations balance that right with the very real strain on financial strain for school districts was by limiting one IEE per district evaluation. So this is not going to create, MD's interpretation is not going to create an endless right to IEE after IEE. It's still tied to the original evaluation.
Isn't it going to create an endless obligation for school districts to have due process hearings to evaluate old evaluations that are no longer accurate because time has passed, and that school districts are going to get requests 2 years, 3 years after the prior evaluation, parent says, no, I don't want a reevaluation, I want an IEE, and school districts are going to constantly be put in the position of having to defend old evaluations without getting a reevaluation?
I understand the premise of that question, Your Honor, but I think there's two responses, which is, one, if a parent genuinely does not disagree with the old evaluation and they just want a new one, they would also think that it is a waste of time and energy and money to go to a due process hearing and litigate that. Not if
what they want is an independent evaluation instead of a reevaluation by a school district.
Perhaps, but I think that the other thing is that under the alternative view, a parent is going to be counseled to request an IEE right away, always. Because if there is some amount of time that has passed through which a school district can say, circumstances have changed, we agree, let's just do a reevaluation, then they have to go through the due process hearing in order to obtain the IEE to which they have a right, then they will be counseled to simply request an IEE right away.
Well, that assumes they have counsel right away.
Yes, it does.
I have a question following up, well, two questions following up on Judge Larson's questions, but the first is with regard to how do you reconcile your position with NDS? Because in NDS, the district court specifically said that, you know, once the statute of limitations issue is resolved, it then asked, you know, what should the scope of a due process hearing or an IEE be? And it noted that the purpose of the IEE is obviously to address the matter in controversy, specifically the alleged shortcomings of the school's evaluation that gave rise to the hearing or the IEE. And then it says if a hearing or IEE is ordered, the hearing or IEE must focus on whether the original reevaluation or evaluation in this case was appropriate at the time it was completed. So how do you reconcile your decision here with that language in the NDS decision, which suggests that this condition is appropriate?
So the NDS decision had gone through a due process hearing and was before the federal court, and the federal court looked at the facts of that case and based on the significant change circumstances there, came to the conclusion that the parents' request for the IEE was not genuine, based on genuine disagreement with the prior evaluation, but rather with a desire to have their preferred provider do an independent evaluation. And so that was a neutral decision maker kind of questioning the right to the IEE. And so then applying a limitation on that in that particular case on any remedy that the due process hearing officer might order there. This is a general criterion applying to all requests for an IEE.
Doesn't the reasoning that the district court used to reach that conclusion apply equally in any case where a parent is requesting an IEE?
I think because
has requested an IEE.
I think if you take a step back and you look at the purpose of the IDEA, which is to facilitate a cooperative process with parents and school districts in order to best serve these students with disabilities, and you think about why an IEE is even an option, and that the regulation does not simply provide for backwards-looking hearings, it is because an IEE serves a slightly different purpose than simply picking apart the previous evaluation. The IEE is bringing in another expert to give a second opinion on what that child's needs, educational needs are. And, you know, in certain cases, that is, this child, what, you know, has certain, you know, disabilities or requirements or needs that were not even identified by the school district in their original evaluation. And so I think the purpose of an IEE is not simply an appeal of the original evaluation. It is something different. And so because it's not necessarily the case that every single parent is going to get an IEE and then use that in a litigation or a dispute with the school, the parent is simply getting more information.
But why would a parent then ever agree to a reevaluation if they could always just request an IEE?
Because they cannot always just request an IEE. An IEE.
They have to have some disagreement, but.
And there's only one IEE per evaluation that the district conducts. And I think the other thing that's happening here is that when a parent is requesting an IEE, there's some sort of breakdown in, maybe it's a breakdown in trust between them and the school district, and so they want a second opinion. If a parent thinks that the school district has been doing a great job evaluating their child, meeting their needs, and they simply think that the child's needs have changed, certainly they would request a reevaluation. And it is also incumbent on the district to be paying attention to the child's changing needs and request a reevaluation when they think that child's circumstances have changed. And here, the parent said we need a reevaluation before the school district ever identified that as a need. And so while the school district contends that everyone here agrees that circumstances had changed, they had not asserted that or brought that to the attention of the parent.
Is the record clear that the parent first requested an IEE before asking for a reevaluation? I thought you just said the parents requested the reevaluation.
So the parent
requested an IEE prior to that, correct?
Certainly. The parent first requested a second opinion, which, you know, I think in the circumstances is fair to read as a request for an IEE. The parent then reiterated that request two more times before the district came back and said, we'll do an IEE about the past evaluation, but we can also do a reevaluation here. And I think at that point, the parent was requesting an IEE because they wanted a second opinion to bring to the table to develop a more comprehensive plan for this child.
Am I correct, Ms. Allen, that we can't interpret this regulation without looking at the statutory authorization of it, the U.S. Code, correct? The IDEA itself?
Yes.
Okay, and so when I look at the code 1414, which is incorporated in Minnesota Statute 125A08, obligates the school to determine by an initial evaluation or a reevaluation the needs of the student. So when you couple that with the purposes of the independent evaluation, it is to respond to that evaluation or reevaluation. If I read that correctly. And so that necessarily becomes a part of this code regulation that we're looking at. But doesn't that necessarily mean there would have to be a reevaluation Or if a student disagrees, there's no change, it would necessarily have to be limited to the prior because it's in response, the parental response, to determine whether they wish to determine they agree or disagree with their own independent evaluation. And the further you get away, such as here, from it, and with circumstances, at least on its face, appearing in the record to change, then you would, absent that, end up with a independent evaluation that determines the needs of the child because everybody's agreeing the prior one, either the client, the student says it was badly done or the school says it's outdated, that would be contrary to the statute. Isn't that the end result that would occur?
I'm not sure, Your Honor. I think that, the statute is requiring the school district to identify the student's needs, but that doesn't necessarily mean that the school district must be the one who employs the evaluator. If the independent evaluation becomes what everyone is relying on because everyone agrees that it is the best source of information, the school district is still living up to its obligation to identify the student's needs and the services.
But
that
it has to respond to either the evaluation or reevaluation. It can't be independently the needs, right? That would be inconsistent with the statute.
I think that the purpose of an independent evaluation is slightly broader than simply just responding tit for tat for it with the original evaluation.
And that's what I was just going to ask you about, going back to your statement about that. What authority are you relying on when you argue that the IEE serves a slightly different purpose than just picking apart the last evaluation, which is what I think you said earlier?
Yes. There's a, I cite a letter to Baus in the briefing. It's a regulatory decision, a federal regulatory decision that says that areas outside of the district evaluation can be covered by a publicly funded IEE. And so if a parent...
Is there any rule or a statute that you would point us to?
If you look at it, so subdivision E, which is at issue here, says that the agency criteria must be, or sorry, the independent evaluation criteria must be the same as the school district's criteria. And those criteria are laid out, or at least the minimum criteria are laid out in earlier regulations.
And in your view, is that language ambiguous or unambiguous, paragraph E?
My view is unambiguous.
Okay. And the criteria that the school district uses when it initiates an evaluation, in your view, what are those criteria?
So there are certain minimum criteria that are set out, and I think CFR 300.303, I want to say it's cited in the brief, which requires certain levels of rigor in the evaluating the present needs of the child and the using accepted methodologies and things of that nature. And so I think when that statute is saying, or the regulation is saying, that certain criteria need to be, the same criteria need to be used, it's the level of rigor that the independent evaluator must apply.
So it's the rules that the evaluator, standards that the evaluator is applying.
Certainly, the rules that the evaluator is using to evaluate the present condition of the child.
Could I ask?
Sure.
Now, isn't it true, Ms. Allen, before you get to E, though, we're back up at B, and a parent has a right if the parent disagrees with the evaluation. So whatever the most recent evaluation, so in our vernacular, we'd say, well, why do you disagree? Well, I'll have my expert answer that question for me as to why I disagree with the evaluation. Doesn't that explicitly or fairly clearly require that the evaluation, to compare to the evaluation, be at the time and place of the original, the more the time goes by, and even if it's a month later, obviously that's what they'll do. There's not likely to be as much change, a month or two or three, but the point being is, on its clear, plain reading, why do you disagree with the evaluation? It would make no sense to consider new information 14 months later, would it? Because then you're not disagreeing with the evaluation, you're reevaluating.
So I think it in the regulation regarding, let's see,
B1.
Yes. Sorry. What I'm looking for is in the regulation, it says that, oh, yes, C. If a parent obtains an independent educational evaluation, oh, sorry. C1, the results of the evaluation must be considered by the public agency in any decision, if it meets agency criteria, in any decision made with respect to the provision of the free and appropriate education of the child. And so it's not necessarily that the IEE is simply a means to identify all of the ways that the parent disagrees with the original evaluation. Certainly it's the disagreement that gives rise to the right, but once the evaluation happens, it is additional information that the school must then consider in making decisions about the student's education.
But you don't get to that point until you have a right. Your point being is you don't think disagreeing means just that, so you have to look at the evaluation and explain why you disagree. And it might only be parts of it. I assume that's always the case, but I don't understand how is it responding to the evaluation if it's including new information that then obligates the district without having been able to do their own reevaluation to be obligated to consider.
I understand what your I guess take the example of a student, a student has been evaluated by the district and the district identifies two areas of needs and the parents are certain that there's a third area of need and they say, I disagree with this evaluation. I'd like my own independent one on this third area. We're not picking apart what you did on the first two issues. We just want to look at this third area. The school district, and then they do the independent evaluation on that third area. Then they're going to bring that information to the IEP meeting and say, let's consider this when we're doing the whole decision about the services. We're not saying, I disagree with 1, 2, and 3 over here, and so I think that we should do different services. We're saying, I want additional services because my independent evaluation identified additional areas of need for my student.
But isn't that what the school district essentially was proposing, is we'll do a reevaluation and they might come up with those two. Now you do the IEE, which might come up with the third, and now we'll get back together, but everything's up to date and we'll sit down with our IEP. But in the absence of being allowed to do that, then you don't get to that hypothetical you're referring to.
Certainly, Your Honor, but I think the main issue here is that if the school district can always change, like claim that circumstances have changed, then that is just, it's creating all these additional procedural hurdles. Because for instance, if the same scenario just described, but the first evaluation happened a year ago and the parent says, over the last year, I've noticed that we have this whole additional area and I disagree with the first one in the sense that it missed something, then you don't need to do a whole reevaluation over here in order to bring in more information here and then come together and have a comprehensive plan for the student. So I think, and I think the ultimate point here is that the IEE is not merely just an appeal, and it's designed to bring more information to the process. And by imposing this criterion, which is born of this fear or concern that parents are engaging in these machinations to abuse this right, which is already fairly cabined by the regulations, that the school district here is overly limiting the parental right to an IEE.
Thank you.
Okay. May I ask two questions?
I'm standing there. Why not?
Certainly.
You rely pretty heavily on the Trumbull case from the Second Circuit in your briefing. My first question with regard to that is that I think, is the case where everyone is getting the language about the purpose of the IEE is to level the playing field between the parent and the government and securing the parent's ability to obtain the assessment if the school falls short, which I think is somewhat indicating that there is this tie between the two. And so I'm interested in why, in how your statutory interpretation that I can request an IEE 3 years after the initial evaluation and get it evaluated at this time is responding to the case that you cite as the best authority for your position, that getting a brand new evaluation 3 years after the previous
evaluation. Are you suggesting it was 3 years in this case?
No. I'm saying hypothetically 3 years later, because I think that under Turnbull, you can have up to 3 years before the reevaluation that you can request an IEE. Isn't there some disconnect with the idea that the IEE looks at 3 years later when what you're disagreeing with is something that happened 3 years previous?
So I agree, Your Honor, that there is the tie. MDE, fully understands the tie. And I think the Trumbull case, the position that I cite it for is that it's not that it is a hard 3 years. It is that the right to an IEE, the kind of statutory limit on that, is tied to the frequency with which the school reevaluates the child.
Now we're going to get to my question about that.
Had the school requested a reevaluation of the child, we would be in a different situation here. But here it was the parent saying, looking back, I don't think that this evaluation fully identified the needs of my child. And so I disagree with it. I would like a second opinion. Had the MDE did not determine or look at a case in which the school said, it's time for your child's reevaluation, circumstances have changed. And the parent said, no, I do not want a reevaluation. I would like an IEE instead. So I think that if the school has not initiated a reevaluation process, that's sort of a tacit admission that they don't view the student as having changed their educational needs, changing such that a reevaluation is required, which is essentially saying our old evaluation still holds up. So when the parent says, I disagree with that old evaluation, I would like an IEE, the school has two options. They can say, you know what, that old evaluation, we still stand on it. We're going to go defend it at a due process hearing. Or they can say, let's get, sure, here, you can have an IEE. Those are its choices.
So my second question with regard to the Trumbull case, and then I promise that's my last question, is what is its applicability in a state where parents can deny reevaluations? If, part of what we're doing in this case is, deciding not just the facts in this case, but future cases, what's the applicability for Trumbull, given that our jurisdiction does not have the same rule that court was faced with, where there is a way for school districts to get reevaluations?
So MD in Minnesota, because parents are can always deny consent to a reevaluation, that's not something in an MDE or the school district, no one can override that decision. I think here, if the school had initiated a reevaluation and the parent had denied consent, but then requested an IEE, I think it might be the situation where that right to an IEE no longer attaches because the school district is no longer standing on its old evaluation. But I mean, to be frank, I don't know. And MDE hasn't decided that question. They haven't seen that question yet.
I have one more question. Sorry, I meant to ask this earlier, but the decision by MDE at issue here in the addendum at 15, So MDE concluded both that the condition was not the same as the criteria the district used when it initiated an evaluation, and that it was not consistent with the parent's right to an IEE. But I don't help. Well, What was the basis for the MDE's conclusion that it was not consistent with the parent's right to an IEE? I'm not sure I see that spelled out super clearly in the decision.
I think for all the reasons we've just discussed, MDE views the parent's right as to an IEE as a right to this comprehensive, or, you know, as comprehensive as an exam as the independent evaluator.
Is it equivalent to a reevaluation then?
Not necessarily. It depends on what sort of you can hire. I believe that you can hire an independent evaluator to assess the student in one area, or a comprehensive evaluation.
Okay, and so the inconsistency with the parents' rights is for the reasons you've already discussed.
Yes.
Okay. All right, we'll leave it there unless there's any questions. All right, thank you for answering all the questions.
Thank you. Thank you.
Well, and now we'll have some rebuttal, and certainly if there's more questions from the panel, we'll give you additional time.
I wanted to start by addressing Judge Cochran's question at the end of my initial time about paragraph E. I would agree that it is unambiguous, but when you break down part one and part two separately, I think the district still complies with both of those. So with respect to the, you know, it being the same, I think the district has to comply with federal regulations, and so does the IEE. So, you know, if the criterion had said that, you know, the district has to follow 34 CFR 300 point, blanking on it off the top of my head, and the parent has to comply with 34 CFR 300 502 and NDS, I think it shows the similarity between those two criteria. The problem here, again, is that the district is trying to communicate with parents, not attorneys here. So the description of the NDS decision and that language from it is how the district chose to describe that criteria. But then when you look to...
You would agree that that language is a condition of the IEE. The language that it must...
Yes, that it has to respond to the...
It has to...
Focus on whether the district...
Focus on whether the district evaluation was appropriate at the time it was completed.
Yes, and that also gets to the...
Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you there. I just want...
Yep. So then when you look at subparagraph E2, it says that except for the criteria in E1, a public agency may not impose conditions or timelines related to obtaining an IEE. But here, again, the district is describing conditions that exist in the regulations and in our federal courts. So it's not a different, something new condition that the district has imposed. It's a condition that exists because of the existing regulations and the federal court. So I would say the district also does not violate that subparagraph 2 because it's not a specific condition that the district imposes separately from what the federal law requires.
Go ahead. I was just going to ask, does subdivision 2 really... I mean, as I read subdivision 2, it really relates to, I mean, I read it as relating to like how the IEE is obtained as opposed to the actual content of it, imposed conditions or timelines related to obtaining the IEE, as in they can't say the IEE assessment can only occur at the school within the next 2 weeks, and the IEE evaluator has to issue their report within 7 days after the evaluation. Why isn't that the plain meaning of subdivision E2?
Yeah, I think that's a fair reading of that. The related to obtaining, I thought made it a little broader than just that we can't impose conditions on like the circumstances, but I think that that's a fair reading too, is that you can't create sort of additional barriers to obtaining an IEE.
If you were writing it for lawyers rather than parents, if I understand your point, and this maybe goes back to our discussion mm-hmm. earlier, there's obviously a a legal interpretation difference between the school districts and the Department of Education. And I always thought they worked together so closely, but apparently not. And that is that we'll do an independent evaluation consistent with law and regulations, right? Your point being is you believe in reading this, it necessarily under this type of scenario cannot be a reevaluation through an IEE. And therefore, in order to explain your difference with, your disagreement with, it would necessarily, as a matter of law, have to be limited to the facts and information 14 months ago. Am I saying that?
Yes.
Whereas you wanted to, you're explaining it to a parent, and so you incorporated that language to expel that out.
Yes, that's correct. And I think, you know, prior to the decision that's on appeal here, I think the district did not have any reason to believe that MDE took a different position because that 2019 decision incorporated NDS. So, you know, I think that to the extent that the district is informing, you know, would even be informing other lawyers of what that the requirement is, I think that without knowledge that MDE had, you know, changed their position, that it would be reasonable for the district to say this is the law in Minnesota because that's what our federal court says.
And I certainly understand that, but I have a question for you. Sorry, go ahead.
No.
Going back to the department's argument, you know, counsel for the department suggested that a parent may disagree with an evaluation because they think that the district just failed to evaluate an area that should have been evaluated. The language that was included that the MDE decision found had to be removed, would that language preclude the IEE from focusing on that area that wasn't examined in your view?
So I don't think
in other words, the focusing on whether the district's evaluation was appropriate at the time it was completed, does that preclude looking at a different area that wasn't examined?
I don't think it does. And that's because the parents could disagree and say it wasn't appropriate because it wasn't sufficiently comprehensive. You know, we think that the student has needs in this area, so we want an IEE in this area. The limitation based on NDS is really temporal. So
as a practical matter, then, a parent gets an IEE to comply with this, would the evaluator be limited to looking at only the information that was gathered a year and a half ago by the district? Because the kid, you know, you can't go back in time a year and a half when you're doing a new evaluation.
Yeah, and
how does that work practically? How does this restriction or condition work as a practical matter for the evaluator doing the IEE?
Sure. And I don't think even in the a normal circumstances that this criteria restricts the independent evaluator from doing new assessments or looking at data that was not included in the district's evaluation report. It would just be looking at that data, you know, close in time to when it occurred. And NDS speaks to the practical.
I missed that something there. You said it doesn't preclude doing a new evaluation or getting new data, but it has to be tied to the data back in time. How does that work?
So in the normal circumstance where NDS talks about how typically if a parent, you would do the evaluation, provide that to the parents, and then the parents say, we disagree with this, we want to get an independent evaluation. I don't think this has to be read so literally that it is if the district did its assessment on October 31st, that's what the independent evaluator has to review. Because NDS talks about how when you're looking at things in a relatively short time period, kids don't generally change that much. But the problem, the practical problem that you describe arises.
But NDS, I mean, you would agree that there doesn't have to be another reevaluation for 3 years. So there's really no bar to asking for, if you disagree with an evaluation, you don't have to ask for it within 2 months or 4 months or 6 months. You could ask for it a year and a half later.
So under the way that the regulations state that, yes, there's no temporal, there's no automatic, this date is too long in the regulations. But NDS talks about how the further we get from that initial evaluation, then we may be in a situation where it's harder to gather that data. But that's because the parents chose to delay that request.
Well, maybe they just didn't. I mean, figuring out what's going on with your kid can be hard. And you, as a parent, you may not know that your kid might have some other issue because you're not a psychologist. So I don't know that it's the parents like intentionally delaying in every case. I think that's not necessarily a fair assumption. So there could be circumstances where it was entirely reasonable for a parent to, you know, not understand, not have a disagreement for a period of time beyond a few months.
Yeah, and I agree that it's not fair to generally say that all parents who delay a request are trying to engage in the same machinations as the NDS parents were. I think the similarities that we have in this case are that we have, you know, the same counsel from NDS coming in and running sort of the same playbook. And we have here, you know, parents saying, as counsel for the department indicated, you know, parent says, well, I want to retest. But then when, as Judge Sleater pointed out, if all the parent wanted was retesting of that initial testing, there wouldn't be any reason to object to this criteria. So I think that there is a mismatch between the parent's words and their actions in this case that suggests that there's something that what they are really looking for is a reevaluation.
But that's not the question here. I mean, the question is whether this, not whether there should have been a reevaluation. The question is whether the condition was appropriate.
Yeah, and I
agree that there certainly are cases where an IEE has been requested at 14 months and that has been granted and they've done the IEE and that hasn't been a problem. I mean, I think that happens all the time.
Yes, it does happen, and you know, I will say I have a school district right now doing one after 2 years because the district didn't want to end up where Hermantown is right now.
Can I follow up on that? Mm-hmm. I wondered about that. I was hopeful that the more common scenario where there's more mutual trust between parent, child, and school is that there's kind of a mutual understanding after so many months that some things have changed, and then the parents say, okay, let's do a new comprehensive evaluation because the school district is willing to do it. And then if you disagree with that more recent one, because I think there's a piece missing, then that's mm-hmm. when the IEE is requested.
So as long as a year has passed from the prior evaluation, a parent can always request a new evaluation, and it can be done within that year if the parent and district agree. So the parent does have the ability to ask the school to do that new testing first and then have the opportunity to request that IEE in response to the updated information. And that speaks to the point where then we are the independent evaluator and the school district are talking about the same point in time rather than trying to say, you know, what we found a year and a half ago is not consistent with where the student is at now when everyone agrees that situation has changed.
I meant to ask a question over an hour ago. is there any legal significance to a parent regularly approving IEPs that come from an evaluation and then there's amendments to it and there's either what we call the active, and I think the phrase I saw was passive, you know, consent, but does that have any legal relevance to this issue in terms of as it relates to an agreement or disagreement with the original evaluation?
I think it shows the parents, if a parent does not request a IEE in response to an evaluation or, you know, as those IEPs are being drafted, the parent doesn't say you're not identifying the needs or, you know, what your evaluation said about the student's needs is not accurate. It's not consistent with what we see at home or something, that a parent who fails to, you know, identify any sort of difference between those does suggest that they agree with that evaluation. And as, you know, they go...
At least it's a fair inference. It's not illegal, is kind of what I was getting at.
Yeah, correct.
It's reasonable for the district to infer that, well, they've been agreeing for many months.
Yes, that's correct. There's no legal effect of it, but I think the district would fairly assume that the parent does not object to the evaluation if the parent is agreeable to the services that result from that evaluation.
Okay, I have one more question for you. Can you respond to the department's argument that the IEE serves a slightly different purpose than picking apart the last evaluations?
Yes. So the with respect to the ability of the IEE to assess different areas, I agree that it doesn't have to directly respond to something that the district did if the parent's position is, I disagree with that evaluation because you didn't evaluate all of the areas that my kid needs. So I think, you know, to the extent that it can serve a purpose of allowing a parent to identify somebody in a particular area of expertise that they think the district failed to evaluate, that serves a, you know, it is not literally district this, you know, page two, paragraph B is wrong because my expert says this, but my expert says the kid has needs in speech language and the district didn't even do an evaluation of that. So that's what I understand there to be the ability for that slightly broader purpose rather than a, you know, we're not expecting a line by line refutation in an IEE, but that it is still because the district's choice when presented with that is to defend that evaluation or just pay for the IEE, I think there needs to be that tie between the evaluation that the district performed and the IEE.
So why are you so concerned that this language be included? Why is the school district so concerned, given that E says the IEE will only be paid for by the public if it's done under the same criteria as the public agency uses when it initiates an evaluation?
So if the parent goes ahead with the IEE and the district then says this doesn't comply with our criteria, the district's option is to request a due process hearing to determine that those fees should not be paid. And in the district's after NDS chose to add this language in an attempt to prevent parents from going through that whole situation, and then the district still needing to go through a due process.
What type of situation would arise where, what would the IEE look like that would cause the district to say that it wasn't an evaluation that met that language?
So I think here, if the evaluator said, you know, reviewing the child's history, he has a recent example of some sort of trauma to his brain, and based on that, here are his needs, that's different than responding to the evaluation at the time that it was created.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Any further questions?
I've run out of questions for now. I have more.
Oh, we've got another case coming up. So, all right. Well, thank you to both counsel. You did a great job answering our questions. We very much appreciate it. It will really help in our consideration of the important issues presented by this case. Case is now submitted. We will issue our opinion within the statutory time frame.